This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Yik. When it comes to breast cancer, we've spoken at length about advancements in treatment, but the fact is that many cases of breast cancer in Malaysia are still diagnosed at the late stages. So we need to take a few steps back and ask ourselves whether we are doing enough in terms of screening and self-examination in order to pick up breast cancer earlier. And in the studio with me today to shed some light on the aspects of screening, we have three doctors from the Faculty of Medicine, University Technology, MARA. They are Dr. Marfuanik Izamuddin, consultant clinical and oncologist, Dr. Norfaizan Abdul Rashid, consultant breast surgeon, and Dr. Marlina Tanti Ramli Hamid, clinical radiologist. Good afternoon, doctors. How are you today?
Very good.
Thank you.
Dr. Marfua, can we start first with you to pick up on what I mentioned about breast cancer in Malaysia being diagnosed at the late stages? Can you shed some light on that? At what stage is it typically diagnosed?
Okay, the good thing is that we have a recently published study on My Cancer Survival Malaysia Cancer Survival 2018. So we look at all the cancer in Malaysia, and in particular we actually had a deeper look into breast cancer, and we can see that in terms of the presentation we are still far behind. Basically, we are more than 40% of patients still present at the later stages 3 and 4. That's only about 20% of patients presenting at stage 1.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually compared to the other rest of the regions in the countries in our region, we are basically behind.
Mm-hmm.
And when that translates into the survival for breast cancer patients in Malaysia, we are around 68% five-year overall survival.
Okay, could you explain what that means, actually, the five-year survival?
So meaning if we take patients with breast cancer across stages, okay, so all the stages, stage 1 till stage 4, and we take all this breast cancer group until 5 years, and we look at how many are still alive, so around 60%. So we are around 66%. And we are almost similar with Thailand. But looking at Singapore, their five-year survival is around 80%.
Mm.
And Japan has the highest, actually, in the studies, about 89%.
Okay.
So that's definitely something that we should look into.
Dr. Faizan, breast cancer is probably the most well-known in a sense among all the cancers as well. There's been so much awareness about it. So why do you think this is still a problem, women coming in at late stages?
Okay. I mean, as what we see day-to-day basis, some women, some of them educated, some of them not really, and some of them, they have quite good access to health facilities, and also influenced by their social background. So this is what we see that might influence that why certain women somehow came late, some of them came very early, or even some of them came early and get diagnosed, but at the end of the day, they somehow default their treatment. They tend to go to some alternative treatments, these are the things that we see day-to-day basis. So that's my opinion about it.
So you're saying that there's actually there are no differences in terms of the demographic factors as to who comes in late. You see them across the board?
Because it depends, where we are now, the majority of the populations where we are practicing now is in Sungai Buloh area. There's a Malay and Chinese. Okay, but what we see is how they present is, of course, most of them present with some complaints. And I would say less than 5% that we've seen so far in my center that come because of they went for a proper screening, meaning that they don't have any complaint. They just go and because of they're aware of this breast cancer, mm-hmm. they go and check themselves and they get referred to mm-hmm. our center, mm.
So just speaking on the ethnic differences, so if you look at the study I mentioned before, looking at even the survival across the races, so the Chinese tend to survive better compared to Indian, and then we actually have Malay So the Malays are surviving less compared to the Chinese patient. And this also reflects in the way that they present and the stages that they present. I guess in terms of ethnicity, the Chinese tends to present much earlier. And we do have a lot of patients who are Malays who actually present at the later stage.
Okay.
And picking up on just now why people, I think number one, cancer is still like something that people do not want to talk about, even though the numbers are doubling and increasing and we expect like a lot more of cancer cases coming in. But it's just, I think, talking about it, that's also one thing that we are not doing very well.
So, Dr. Marlina, the whole reason we are here to talk about this today is to emphasize the importance of screening and self-examination, which is something that women can do at home first, right?
Yes.
So, can you help us understand the importance of we start with self-examination, because I guess that's the point that whatever women can do before they even reach the healthcare provider.
Okay. I think breast self-examination is encouraged in women. However, there are no evidence showing that... I mean, it empowers women to be self-breast aware. But there's... I mean, if you look at the evidence and data out there, there's no evidence showing that there is a reduced breast cancer mortality because of self-breast examination.
Mm.
Hence, I think it's just more empowerment to women to be aware of how their breasts and the changes of their breasts throughout their menstrual cycle, really. So with regards to screening, I think there are multiple evidences showing that regular screening mammogram reduced breast cancer mortality of approximately 15 to 20% in women 40 to 69.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. However, with screening, there is also, it exposes women to harm. For example, when you do regular screening, you have false positive results. And at the same time, you will there's overdiagnosis as well as overtreatment of lesion that will otherwise not be problematic to the women throughout their lifetime. And not to mention, if you undergo regular mammography, screening, we mean mammography, yeah? It will create anxiety, distress, as well as discomfort during the procedure itself. So when we look at the guidelines out there, there's Malaysian guidelines, we look at UK guideline, US guideline, it differs.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference, it differs in when we're supposed to start screening, at what age we're supposed to stop, and how regularly we should screen this average-risk woman. We're talking about average-risk woman, yeah? The difference is there because we are trying to balance this risk and benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So in Malaysia, our clinical practice guideline in 2010 recommends that mammography screening should be performed once in 2 years
mm-hmm.
in women 50 to 74. Okay, but breast cancer screening using mammogram in average risk women from 40 to 49 should not be offered routinely. But if they desire to do so, then mammogram should not be denied to them.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
So it's not recommended, but mm-hmm. if they want to do mammogram, we mm-hmm. will still do it for them.
Okay.
Women with high risk should do mammogram from the age of 30 with both MRI and mammogram yearly.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've mentioned the word risk several times now.
Yeah.
So let's try to understand that, right? What does average risk mean and what does high risk mean?
Breast cancer risk assessment is very important for identifying women who may benefit from more intensive breast cancer screening and surveillance. However, there's no standardized approach to breast cancer screening assessment, not just in Malaysia, but generally.
Mm-hmm.
So when we say high risk women, usually we meant women with known genetic mutations such as BRCA1 mm-hmm. and BRCA2.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also other genetic mutations that is increasingly being found, such as TP53 genes, PALB2 genes, that increases the risk of breast cancer.
Okay.
There is also, your risk is also increased when you have a first degree relative with BRCA1 or BRCA2.
Mm-hmm.
You have first degree relative with breast cancer or ovarian cancer. Or you yourself have personal risk of breast cancer. and you have, meaning you have had breast cancer before, so your risk is higher. Plus, you have been exposed to chest wall radiation as a young female at the age of maybe between 10 or 30. Usually, these are patients who have lymphoma and they have radiation to the chest wall.
Okay.
So these are patients who are usually high risk, who would require annual MRI and a mammogram for breast cancer screening.
Okay, all right.
The rest are all fall under average risk group.
I see, all right. But, you know, when it comes to identifying whether you have these genes, for instance, how do we go about, you know, genetic testing isn't routine either and expensive and, you know, it's bound to cause a lot of anxiety. So how do we balance that?
I think number one that we a lot of people don't know about the family history risk. So if we take 100 patients with breast cancer, there's only 10, less than 10 would actually have some family history. The rest is unknown or other risk factors. So family history is not really the main determinant that you might get breast cancer, because a lot of patients, they feel that no one in my family has breast cancer. I don't need to check for breast cancer because it doesn't run in my family. But I guess the biggest thing that people would need to know, that is actually the postmenopausal state, because we see the incidence of breast cancer definitely increases after you become postmenopausal. So going back to that, I mean, genetic screening is not for everyone. So I guess we go back to see that the median, basically the most patient that we see, the age that we see with breast cancer is above 50.
Mm-hmm.
So if your family member presents with breast cancer at the age of 70, I don't think that's a family risk. It's not genetically inclined. But if your family, your mom or your sister presented way earlier than what we normally see, say at the age of 35 or 40, then I think that calls for a discussion on genetic counselling. Not necessarily genetic screening, but a discussion on it.
Okay.
Because as you say, it's expensive, there's anxiety around it. What do we do if you're positive? What do we do with the rest of the family? So it has a lot of implication.
Mm. Okay. We are speaking to Dr. Marfua Nick Izamuddin, consultant clinical oncologist, Dr. Norfaizan Abdul Rashid, consultant breast surgeon, and Dr. Marlina Tanti Ramli Hamid, clinical radiologist. They are all from the Faculty of Medicine, University Technology, MARA. We are discussing breast cancer screening today. And so we'll go for a quick break now. And when we come back, we'll look at what to expect during the mammogram that Dr. Marlina has explained, sort of the guidelines for who needs to go for a mammogram. And so it'll be good to know what actually happens when you go for a mammogram. So we want to break down those taboos. So stay tuned to us. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. We are talking about breast cancer screening today and getting to know your breasts. We have three doctors from the Faculty of Medicine, University Technology, MARA, in the studio with us today. Dr. Marfua Nick Izamuddin, consultant clinical oncologist, Dr. Norfaizan Abdul Rashid, consultant breast surgeon, and Dr. Marlina Tanti Ramli Hamid, clinical radiologist. And before the break, in the earlier part of the show, we talked about the screening guidelines for women in Malaysia. And so if you're average risk, you should go for mammograms once every 2 years, from the age of 50 to 74 years. The risk factors are really determined by whether you have a first-degree relative who has breast or ovarian cancer, or if they have the BRCA-type cancer, or if you carry the genes that put you at risk. For instance, BRCA or TP53. Were among the ones that you mentioned. But basically what it comes down to is, you know, if you fall you know, a lot of women would fall into the average risk group. And so for us to go for the screening procedure, in the first place, where do we access screening in Malaysia?
Currently, mammogram screening in Malaysia is an opportunistic screening program. We don't have a population-based screening programs such as in UK and the US, okay? So in opportunistic screening program, the attendance to screening depend on individual's decision or when you encounter healthcare providers where screening mammogram may be recommended. So there are many avenues where women can access mammographic screening. Screening can be done at a government clinic or private hospital with, government hospital or private hospital with mammogram facility.
Mm-hmm.
As of the 2015, there are several major entities that offer subsidized mammogram screening program in Malaysia, including the Ministry of Health, the National Population and Family Development Board of Malaysia, which we also known as LPPKN, mm-hmm. the Social Security Organisation, SOCSO, and two state government. The National Cancer Council of Malaysia also provide free mammographic service using one mobile mammogram machine housed in a 40-foot mobile trailer. These are more for rural areas. Except for the Ministry of Health and the National Cancer Council of Malaysia, mobile screening unit, all the other entities do not have their own facilities to do the mammogram. So they will only provide funding for the mammogram and the service will be outsourced to the private facility clinic or the government hospital.
Mm.
Okay.
And when you mentioned government hospitals, are these the general hospitals in every state?
Most general hospitals will have mammogram facilities in Malaysia.
Okay. So still on you, Dr. Marlina, what can I expect when I go to do a mammogram?
Okay. Mammogram is essentially it's an X-ray of the breast, really. It helps in early detection and diagnosis of breast disease in women. So it's used for screening in women without any symptoms, as well as diagnosis to evaluate in women who present with breast symptoms such as pain, nipple discharge or lump. Okay, generally, mammogram will be done in radiology department. Okay, before you come to mammogram, we will tell you there's a minimal preparation beforehand, really. We'll advise you to skip wearing deodorant, perfumes or body powder because some deodorants can have metallic particles that can look like microcalcification in mammogram. Early stage breast cancer can present as microcalcification. So this metallic particle in the top might mimic early cancer. So that's why you should avoid wearing this deodorant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You also advise to wear two-piece clothing lah, so that it's easier for you to undress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So during the mammogram itself, a radiographer, which is a trained technologist in breast imaging, will position your breast in a mammography unit. So your breast will be placed between two plates and will be gradually compressed with a clear plastic paddle from top to bottom and from side to side. So we will repeat this for each breast twice. Mm-hmm. So you have four images each for each breast.
Okay.
Okay. Is it painful?
Yeah, that's the big question, isn't it? A lot of women are afraid of the pain.
Yeah, you will feel pressure on your breast as it's being squeezed by the compression paddle. It may feel slightly or moderately uncomfortable, but it only lasts a few seconds, really, so it's not that long. And each of women's pain threshold are different, and your experience can be different.
Mm-hmm.
But studies have shown that even though women feel discomfort during mammogram, it will not deter them. Most will not be deterred from coming again for their repeat regular mammogram.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about size of the breasts. How does that impact, the results that you get?
Okay. Size of the breasts doesn't really matter with regards to mammography. However, the density of the breasts will affect your mammographic screening. The denser you are, the more obscure the cancer can be in mammogram. Okay, basically, our breast tissue consists of fibroglandular tissue, ducts, fat. It's the ratio between fat and the breast tissue that determine your breast density.
Mm-hmm.
The denser you are, the more difficult for us to see through the mammogram because the fibroglandular tissue will mask the cancers.
Mm.
So if you're dense in Malaysia generally, we will do a supplementary ultrasound scan after your mammogram.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on where you practice, really. In UITM, we will do a supplementary ultrasound in a patient with dense breast to have a look so that we don't miss anything in the dense breast.
Okay. But it's not routinely recommended then?
This It depends on where you practice, really. Right. In the United States, it is mandatory for several states in the US where women with dense breasts are being informed and they will do ultrasound, but it's not mandatory throughout the state. So it's similar situation in Malaysia, really.
All right. And so from beginning to end, how long does the procedure take?
The mammogram? I'll say less than 15 minutes.
Okay. Excluding some waiting time, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, the whole
it begins, it's about 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's not that long because the compression, I mean, how cooperative you are as well.
What about cost? I mean, you know, putting aside places where it's subsidized or in government hospitals, you know, if women are going to private centres, what kind of range of costs are we looking at?
I think it ranges really, but generally, in private centre, a typical mammogram will probably cost you about 250 ringgit.
Okay.
Generally, but I think it differs from centre to centre. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, are there, Dr. Marfuad, do you come across some common misconceptions and fears about screening that, you know, still persist? And would you like to address some of those?
Yes. I think one of the biggest one is that the mammogram itself causes cancer or makes the cancer spread further because of the compression. They feel like the tumour will actually burst and spread further. But that's not true. I think Marina can also concur on this.
Yeah, I think the issue with mammogram is because it's an X-ray, it does give radiation to the breast. So that's why patients are worried. Should we worry about the breast radiation in mammogram? Well, the standard 4-views mammogram will give you an equivalent of about 7 weeks of background radiation dose that we every day receive in our environment. So 7 weeks of our normal environmental radiation is equivalent to 4 standard views mammograms. So it's very, very low risk. Although there's a risk, but it's very low. The risk to cause breast cancer.
No, all right. Yeah. Okay. What might be some of the other misconceptions? Well, one of them, actually, Dr. Faizan, do you find that, and this relates to women's innate fears about breast cancer, do you find that perhaps they are so afraid that they may need breast surgery that they don't even want to step through the door for screening?
Exactly, yes, we've seen suspicion because for us, we think that most of these patients, they are scared of the truth. They are scared of knowing that they have something inside their breast, even though maybe they don't have any complaint. But to go, to step into a hospital or medical center and get your self-check and x-rays or mammogram done, they're just worried. You know, they're scared of the reality of being diagnosed with something. Even sometimes it's just benign, meaning that it's non-cancer something, you know. So that's why, again, I guess awareness and really help to spread the words that it's okay, you know, to all these women, go and get the screening. It's not really harmful to them. It's better.
I think it's also the picture that patients have, that when we talk about cancer, they see somebody with chemo, somebody without hair, and then without breasts. But you know, the thing is, as Faizan said, it might not be cancerous. So the fear of not knowing and also the fear of whether this is cancer, I think that puts people off. And because there's been a lot of promotion in the public that, you know, you could take this and it will prevent your cancer risk. You take this, it could treat your cancer. So they feel that there is actually an alternative to things. Yeah,
and you're talking about alternative therapies here, things like supplements.
Yeah, things like that. And then they hope by trying something, maybe it will go away, things like that. But in general, a lot of people don't know that cancer, the main modality that gives you the best chance of cure is actually surgery. And by the logic of it, you remove it in order to actually try to get rid of most of it. The rest of the treatment is just basically adding up to the main treatment.
Okay. When it comes to surgery, Dr. Faizan, what are the advancements in surgery are we still talking about mastectomies, full breast mastectomies for patients?
Okay. So, well, these days we have, yes, correct, there's a lot of advancements these days. Mastectomy would be the standard practice last time, but now we call it, we call it breast conserving surgery, or some people call it lumpectomy or white local excision or quadrantectomy. It's just remove some part of the tumor, but a little bit of your normal tissue, all right? But even that also, it depends, because some patients are not really suitable for that kind of surgery because maybe the tumor is very big as compared to their breast, or maybe the tumor is not that big, but the breast is just so small. So in order for us to do that breast conserving surgery, it will give quite bad cosmetic outcomes, unacceptable for us. So since all that, we have these days advancement in terms of, we call it oncoplastic surgery or even reconstructive surgery, where maybe we can do a mastectomy and then we do an immediate reconstruction, we create a new breast using patient's own muscles, or put an implant, or in this certain even white local, still sometimes we can do a breast conserving surgery, but because of the breast is a bit small, sometimes we can also add in with the reconstruction. Sometimes we combine it with our plastic surgeons, or some breast surgeons also do reconstruction work, you know. And in the certain cases, if the patient is okay, willing to accept, they are very positive patients, and if they are willing to go for a chemotherapy first in order to shrink the tumor, and then later on we can do a breast conserving surgery, then it's also another options, you know. But that patient, really we reserve those patients that hopefully they will not run away after giving a chemotherapy.
Right, okay.
You know, hopefully. Mm. And then there's another thing, the oncoplastic is sometimes these days we remove a part of big portion, but then we play around with the remaining of the breast tissue and mold it back so that it wouldn't give such a bad cosmetic outcome. Because this, we call it breast conserving surgery, we shouldn't be removing more than 20% of the breast volume. If not, then the cosmetic will be quite bad. But with this oncoplastic, sometimes we can go a little bit more. You just play around, mm-hmm, and make it acceptable, mm, cosmetically.
Okay. Yeah. And you know, when you mentioned some patients who are more positive, right, from your experiences, what makes some patients more positive than others?
Yeah, like I said, themselves. They are very good social, good family support, good social background. But that one is, there's a, I know Tom Rafa will look at me, because there's some patient, those are very good social support and very educated. Also, there are some...
still a different, yes, level of acceptance.
Yes, exactly. But mm-hmm, for those very good, positive thinking, good family support, you know, even their age, like 60 plus, you know, we've seen, you know, they even ask, when can I do the surgery? Even though the patient had, last year, had a heart surgery for certain things, you know, but because of so positive, this patient, 60 plus something, and ask, can I do it now, mm, or tomorrow? You know, very positive. Mm. This, we like this kind of patients. You know, we try to make them like a role model for all the women out there.
I mean, Dr. Mafford, have you seen changes, at least in the way, you know, people come to terms with a diagnosis?
You mean across the years, is it?
Yeah.
I think over the years, people are becoming more educated. And actually with the social media, they are exposed to a lot more. So mm-hmm, I'm not sure whether that's good in it.
Yeah.
Because maybe a few years back, we have patients who will just say, doctor, do your best, I will follow you. Okay. Mm-hmm. And nowadays we have patients say, oh, I read this on Facebook or on WhatsApp, and people say, I can do this and this, what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
So that there are good in it, and there's also the negative part. So it's hard to say. So I would say with the advances in technology, sometimes in terms of the knowledge as well, because you can't see if the knowledge that people can assess. It's mm-hmm, like a whole wide world. Mm. Google, Mr. Dr. Google, mm, is playing a big role in mm, all this. So I would say it's changing, but not necessarily to to the good.
For it's not necessarily automatically for the better, yeah. but it just requires more conversations between the doctor and, yeah. and the patients yeah, and their family members, true. Right? Yeah. We're talking about breast cancer screening today with Dr. Marfua Izamuddin, consultant clinical oncologist, Dr. Noor Faizan Abdul Rashid, consultant breast surgeon, and Dr. Marlina Tanti Ramli Hamid, clinical radiologist from the Faculty of Medicine, University Technology Mara. When we come back, we'll look at what happens after screening. Where do you go? How do you understand your results? Talk a little bit about false positives and overdiagnosis, as well as Dr. Marlina had briefly mentioned earlier, and so that we know how we can move ahead after we've crossed this point. So we'll be right back after this quick break on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Yik. Together with me, three doctors from Faculty of Medicine, University Technology Mara, Dr. Marfua Nik Izamuddin, consultant clinical oncologist, Dr. Noor Faizan Abdul Rashid, consultant breast surgeon, and Dr. Marlina Tanti Ramli Hamid, clinical radiologist. We are talking about breast cancer screening today, and we've spoken at length about what to expect when you go for a mammogram. We've tried to dispel some of the misconceptions and myths about breast cancer screening. But now let's look at what exactly is screening supposed to pick up. It will pick up the presence of tumors or growths in the breast. But can it pick up things like what stage of the cancer it's at?
Screening normally will pick up any abnormality in the breast. And when you say screening, we'll do mammogram of both breasts. And when you can see if there is a tumor in the breast with screening, you can see the size of the tumor. And you can see it as an evidence of other tumors in the breast, in the same breast, in the contralateral breast, or any involvement of the axillary, the lymph nodes in the armpit. So that is local regional staging. So via mammogram, we can do all three.
Okay,
of course, we can't decide on metastasis, which is spread of, if you have cancer, spread of the cancer throughout the body on mammogram itself. You have to do other imaging, CT mainly, to look at distant metastasis. But for local regional screening, mammogram can detect, but also you usually need other supplementary imaging such as ultrasound and MRI to decide.
Okay. How about the type of cancer? I mean, we have things like hormone receptor positive cancers or HER2 positive cancers. Can screening detect those?
No. No, I wanted to point out on that because we're focusing so much on screening, on detection. But what people need to know that you're just going to detect a mass or an abnormality. Yes. Whatever it is, to say that it's cancer or not, the biopsy comes into place.
Yes.
Okay.
So a lot of patients, they are, oh, we've done screening, we've done mammogram, why do you need to put a needle into us?
Yeah.
You really have to do that.
Yeah. So yeah, so that's the next step after screening, the biopsy. Can you explain a little bit about how that's done? Again, it's a scary thought, putting a needle in.
So in general, when you talk about biopsy, is we have basically two types. The one that we use is actually the other one is actually not really a biopsy, but you call it cytology. When you use a small needle, it's just exactly the same needle that usually people take blood to draw blood for some reasons. And the other one is we call it core biopsy or true cut biopsy. That needle is a little bit big. So both usually we depends on. After we see the images, let's say the patient did ultrasound and with mammogram with or without the ultrasound, and then we see if it is a solid mass, let's say, since we talk about breast cancer, so let's focus on some, we call it suspicious lesion. Okay, so what we can do is we can offer first as simple as a needle cytology. Fine needle aspiration and cytology is relatively, yes, a little bit painful because it's a needle. But like I said, the needle is just like the small needle, the one that we used to take blood.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And that one is enough also to give diagnosis whether this is a benign something or this is a malignant something. But of course, there are certain cases that we need to use core biopsy. If, let's say, the lesions is a mix, especially there's a, we call it solid area and there's some cystic area where there's a lot of fluids. So maybe you want to target on that particular solid area. Sometimes we also ask our radiologist to do ultrasound guided or any or mammographic guided biopsy to take the sample. And this tissue, this core biopsy, that one is slightly more painful. Mm-hmm. But do not worry, because we will give the local anesthetic that region, and we take a few samples, and that sample we send to the pathology lab to test what kind of cell is this, whether this is benign or it is malignant. So okay. In general, two, the cytology needle and also the core biopsy.
Okay.
All right.
And, Dr. Marlina, you had already introduced terms like false positives and overdiagnosis. Can you reassure us, first of all, what do they mean? And how often is it going to occur that the results aren't what they appear to be?
Okay. Basically, false positive mammogram is when we say your mammogram is abnormal, and then we will call you back for ultrasound, biopsies for further evaluation, and eventually the histopathology will say no cancer is present.
So it's false positive. But you've had to go through the needle and all that.
You have to go through all those biopsies.
Okay.
And waiting and anxiety and, you know.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, if it's sort of good news at the end of that, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But what if you get a false negative from the screening, from the mammogram?
You do get false negative in the mammogram. If you have false negative, then we will only know it's a false negative.
If you show up with cancer.
When you came back with interval cancer. Mm. Meaning, yeah. So because there are lesions who actually looks benign. Because as a radiologist, generally in Malaysia, we will report our mammogram, breast ultrasound, breast MRI, according to American College of Radiology by RADS guideline. So there are certain criteria that will tell you whether this lesion is suspicious or this lesion is benign or this lesion requires short-term interval follow-up. So following those guidelines, we will assign the abnormality that we see in your breast according to BI-RADS category 1, 2, BI-RADS 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So those which are deemed suspicious is under BI-RADS 4 and 5. So these are the lesions that will undergo biopsies. So if we say your lesion looks benign, for example, if a completely cystic lesion, then we will say it's a cyst and we will give you a BI-RADS 2. So we will just see you again maybe in 2 years' time. But there are cancers such as mucinous carcinoma that can look cystic, and you don't know it until patient comes back with changes in the lesion that we say is normal. Mm. I mean, it's benign. Mm. So that's when you get the false negative.
How often does that happen?
It's rare. I mean, it's not often. But of course, when you come often for screening, we will see all these lesions, and then you will get increase in false negative and false positive rate with increased screening.
Okay. Yeah. And so, you hear stories about how some women, they examine and they check their own breasts regularly. Mm-hmm. They don't feel anything, but, one day they feel a lump or they go for a mammogram and... Mm-hmm. Horrors, it's late stage cancer. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How do we deal with instances like this? It also increases that misconception that, well, what's the point of checking or screening when, I heard of this woman.
I mean, that is the reality. It's hard to take, but this happens. Yes, like Dr. Marina said, there are certain mammogram looks benign, everything, and then somehow we take a biopsy, it turns out to be normal. Then this average risk patient, we see them, we will see them every year in surgical clinic, but their images, their mammogram will every 2 years, yes, we do find, but it's very rare. But it happened. But how do we deal about it is, again, we really have to sit down and counseling, and we have to break down and re-explain to the patient these are the things that might happen before. And then even though that, okay, this the stage that you are now, let's say stage 3, stage 4, there's still some treatment that we can give it to you to, okay, if let's say stage 3, you can still chance of cure, definitely. And it's not like the end of days, not the end of life, it's not like death sentence. There's still treatment. So here, how we do is really we have to counsel the patient, give them hopes, not to scare them. And by doing all this, what we need is usually, I will ask them to come with their spouse or other family members, their children, for support, you know, because I need to explain to them also, because the family members is very important for them to stay strong and at least to follow the plan that given by the by us, the healthcare provider.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, those patients, like I said, even though they are, let's say, third stage, you know, they're still chance of treatments. You have so many treatment diseases, even the surgery, even our oncology part, you have so many things to offer. Even and when it comes to a late stage four, that the one, the latest one, it also depends where exactly the spread, you know. Let's say it's a bones, it's actually it's quite good. You can still live, you know, for some time with good quality of life, provided that, you know, you follow the treatment that we provided to you. But of course, if those are unfortunate one, those already spread to the liver, which is quite bad, you know, yes, that one is, again, even that, we still have some other things to do, giving some medications, even us, our oncology colleague to chip in, and also our palliative physician to help us, you know, to counsel the patient as well as the family members. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, it's not the end, you know, you still have other things to offer.
Can I just comment on that? So as you say, it is very unfortunate that those people, women who actually examine their breasts regularly and then suddenly find out on screening that actually is very advanced. I think number one is empowering women with the right knowledge, because some would say we don't even know what we're looking for.
Mm.
How do we do self-breast examination when we're not sure what are we feeling? So I think number one, that's the biggest biggest thing that we should tackle, that we need to educate women. Sometimes it's not, because different women will have different breasts.
Mm.
So it might not be the same. You might go to your friend and she would feel something different. So I guess knowing your breasts, that's number one.
So let's assume that we examine our breasts regularly enough to know what normal feels like. And so then what... is abnormal then? Is it about a hard lump?
It can be a hard lump, or it could just be some patients just describe a different sensation, but knowing what was normal for you, meaning that you've never had this kind of, I don't know, shooting pain or electricity in the breast, and then suddenly you've been feeling that and it's not going away. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the clue. If it's not going away, you give yourself about 1 or 2 weeks and it's still there, then you have to get it checked. It might not be anything, but at least you've got it checked.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, what I advise my patients is that you check, and you feel that this is not normal, you actually go and have a look.
Okay.
And
bearing in mind that you may have a screening mammogram once in 2 years, but if you have any in between that, if you have any new symptoms to your breast, you're more than welcome to see the breast surgeon. Don't wait.
Yeah.
And then we will not do the mammogram. We will do ultrasound for you if you have breast complaint, because ultrasound is just a sound wave. There's no radiation. So we can do ultrasound to detect any abnormality in the area of interest.
Mm.
So you can have ultrasound if you need to. You don't need to wait for until your next regular mammogram session.
Okay.
Yeah.
Of course.
Basically, coming forward, and then as Faizan said, that we do talk about those unfortunate patients who present very late, but we also need to talk about those who come early and actually are our success stories. Mm. And then again, even if you present at late stages, that it doesn't mean that when there's no hope. And then a lot of the thing is what we use with regards to treatment, we have different modalities of treatment. We have surgery, we have chemo, we have hormone, we have so many things in breast cancer. So when you are present at an advanced stages, perhaps in terms of the treatment modalities, things differ. We need to go with chemo first instead of surgery. So it's a matter of that, rather than, it's stage 3, so you're it's very bad news.
Mm, okay. And so with all this in mind, I think earlier, Dr. Marfua, you mentioned women are scared because of this picture of breast cancer that they have in their minds. So could you perhaps describe the new picture of breast cancer that we should be thinking about, not the picture of a woman who has had to go through chemo and who's suffering, but, you know, with all the advancements that we have now, what is the new picture of breast cancer that you'd like to paint for us?
I think we should think about cancer being something treatable, And even in those who are in advanced stages, they can still be normal. Life doesn't have to stop when you have cancer, but you can continue life with cancer. I think that's the bigger part. I'm not saying everyone should go without chemo, but you have to understand chemo is also cyclical. So you might have all those side effects, the picture that we always see, the vomiting, but they will get better. So after chemo, you're back to normal. So it is just a period. And as I said, we need to see, as you said, we need to see women talking more about breast cancer. It's not something that we shy about or we sort of like talk in basically hushes. It's something that I think even in the UK, what I really like, they've developed this podcast about patients with breast with cancer. There's a few of them talking about cancer so openly. And I think that's something that perhaps we need to do so that we see a different picture of cancer altogether.
Okay. Would you like to mention a little bit about what UITM is doing for Breast Cancer Month?
All right. So for this year, we make a more or less same thing, but we just another additional where we do a road tour, call it Pink October Go to School, where we try to reach to the teachers, because we try to create awareness among them, and just like this, it's more of a screening, it's more of we will do some examination, we call it clinical breast examination. We give some talks by surgeons, radiologists and oncologists, and we have our nurses who come together with us, and we'll give examination.
The idea of that is that because most teachers are female. We see a lot of teachers in our setting. They work so hard, so might as well we go back and give back to our teachers.
Yes.
So I think that's part of why we are going back to school, and we're trying to educate more basically female, and we're choosing to go to school to try to reach out to the community.
And we try two schools only so far this year, and of course the normal our event in our own faculty on the 2nd October, there will be more or less same event, but there's the main one again.
Do you have each of you a final message about breast cancer screening?
Okay, I just would like to say that breast cancer is real. Its incidence is on the rise, so we have to be aware, and there's many platforms for you to detect breast cancer early, and early diagnosis will save life and increase your survival of breast cancer. So don't be shy, come to your GP, go to your regular breast clinic and get it checked up. I mean just get it over and done with, and then if you detect it early, it's almost a cure, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dr. Faizan?
Yeah, and just to continue with what Marina said, is not everything is cancer, It might be a benign. So it's, for me, I think it's a win-win situation. So early detection, aware of this thing is real. If so happen that you are on the unfortunate one that you got the diagnose, accept it. But don't think that it's the end of life. So many out there, a lot of people out there living with breast cancer survive. So just get it checked and think positive.
Dr. Marfua?
Know your breasts. Know your breasts very well. Come and get it checked. Talk about it and know that you're not alone. We're here to walk you through.
Okay. Thank you very much. That was Dr. Marfua Nick Izamuddin, Consultant Clinical Oncologist, Dr. Nor Faizan Abdul Rashid, Consultant Breast Surgeon, and Dr. Marlina Tanti Ramli Hamid, Clinical Radiologist from the Faculty of Medicine, University Technology Mara, talking about breast cancer screening. You've been listening to Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the Business Station.